44 years. That's how long Albert Woodfox lived in a concrete box smaller than most parking spaces. For context, the average American changes 12 times, moves 11 times, and experiences countless relationships in that span. Woodfox experienced none of that. Just 6 by 9 feet of concrete, a metal bed, and isolation so extreme that Amnesty International called it torture. Yet when he finally walked free in 2016, he hadn't been broken. He'd been transformed. This is the story of how a man turned the longest solitary confinement in American history into a masterclass in resistance, dignity, and the unbreakable nature of the human spirit. Born in 1947 in segregated New Orleans, Albert's childhood was a crash course in survival. Picture a 9-year-old hitchhiking 170 miles alone to work tobacco fields, not for pocket money, but because his family needed to eat. When his Navy chef's stepfather's drinking turned violent, his mother fled with 3 children to the Trem, cramming into 2 back rooms with no indoor plumbing. They bathed in metal tubs and used a slop jar at night. Young Albert learned quickly. In a world designed to crush you, you either become prey or predator. He chose predator, forming the 6th Ward High Steppers gang. They weren't hardened criminals. They stole bread from delivery trucks and snuck into theaters. But each petty crime was a small rebellion against a system that had already written them off. At 18, a joyride in a stolen car led to a high-speed chase and a fateful decision: 2 years at Angola prison. He thought returning from Angola would earn him neighborhood respect. He had no idea he was walking into hell with a slave plantation's name. Angola wasn't just a prison. It was an 18,000-acre time capsule of slavery. Named after the African country where the plantation's enslaved people originated, Louisiana simply rebranded after the Civil War. Convicts replaced slaves, working identical fields under the same conditions. In 1965, black prisoners still performed 99% of field labor by hand, while white guards on horseback carried shotguns. Albert developed his own code: never rat, accept your punishment, and speak up if someone else takes blame for your actions. Everything changed during a 1969 escape to New York City. In Harlem, Albert witnessed Black Panthers walking with confidence, organizing communities, selling newspapers without fear. When recaptured in 1971, he carried something more dangerous than any weapon: political consciousness. With Herman Wallace, Albert established Angola's first Black Panther Party chapter, holding meetings on the football field and teaching about institutionalized racism. Their most radical act was forming an anti-rape squad, escorting new prisoners, warning them about predators, physically intervening when necessary. In a place built on dehumanization, they insisted on protecting dignity. When guard Brent Miller was found stabbed to death, the prison erupted. Within hours, a prisoner with known connections to authorities dramatically pointed at Albert. That's one of them. Guards stripped him naked, beat him unconscious, and dragged him to solitary confinement. Black prisoners, especially Panthers, were systematically brutalized. Guards forcibly cut off afros, left threatening notes signed KKK on food trays, and withheld medical care. The evidence was absurd. Witnesses contradicted each other about what Albert wore and basic timelines. The supposed murder weapon had barely 3 drops of blood. A bloody fingerprint on the door matched no one involved. All 3 prosecution witnesses received special treatment: better quarters, furloughs, even freedom to rob banks while supposedly in custody. Albert had 3 alibi witnesses placing him elsewhere. None of it mattered. He was convicted and sent to permanent solitary confinement, not for murder, but for daring to organize, educate, and resist. Most people would break after a year in solitary. Albert spent 44. The cell was 6 by 9 feet, smaller than most bathrooms. Rats, mice, and red ants were constant companions. He was locked down 23 hours daily, with 1 hour for showering and walking the tier. No yard time, no phone calls, no educational programs. Guards beat him regularly for talking back, but he refused to be silent. Albert, Herman, and Robert King transformed their cells into classrooms. They subscribed to newspapers, borrowed law books, taught themselves legal research. They passed notes debating world events, organized collective protests, taught other prisoners they had power. When they refused to return to cells or held onto meal trays, security retaliated. But sometimes they won small victories. Toilet paper, removal of abusive guards, limits on degrading strip searches. Albert's proudest achievement? Teaching a fellow prisoner named Goldie to read. Using dictionary pronunciation guides during their 1 hour out, he brought him from illiteracy to high school reading level in a year. Albert devoured everything the library offered. Malcolm X, Franz Fanon, George Jackson, Marcus Garvey, philosophy, economics, biology. Reading wasn't escape, it was resistance, proof they could not control his mind. The legal battle spanned decades. In 1992, a judge reversed Albert's conviction due to grand jury discrimination, only for him to be reconvicted in 1998 through inflammatory prosecution tactics. Robert King was released in 2001 after 29 years, immediately advocating for his brothers. Albert and Herman's civil lawsuit argued their solitary confinement constituted cruel and unusual punishment. In 2007, a federal judge agreed. They'd been in lockdown longer than anyone in Angola's history. Then came bitter victories. In 2013, Herman Wallace was released on a stretcher, dying of liver cancer after 41 years in solitary. He died 3 days later, asking from the ambulance, "Is everybody smiling?" For Albert, freedom came with compromise. In 2016, facing a system that had lost key evidence, he accepted a nolo contendere plea, maintaining innocence while acknowledging the state could convict him. On his 69th birthday, February 19, 2016, he walked free. Reintegration wasn't instant liberation. It was another kind of work. Albert's body needed a full year to unlearn the muscle memory of shackles. He still wakes at 3 a.m., still battles claustrophobic episodes, still sleeps only 3 to 4 hours at a time. But now he walks them off in his own house, visits Yosemite, speaks at law schools, and has met his great-grandchildren. The impact ripples outward. Angola's notorious Camp J closed in 2018. The Wood Fox Board now oversees reclassification decisions that once went unchallenged. When Albert and King make public appearances, they invoke Herman's presence, maintaining their trinity. They campaign for congressional hearings on the 13th Amendment's prison labor provisions and advocate for abolishing solitary confinement entirely. Yet Albert says something that stops you cold. "I would not change one thing about my life, not one moment of dedication, not one moment of struggle." This isn't false bravado. It's the recognition that his suffering exposed a truth America needed to see, that 44 years of attempted dehumanization failed, that reading Fanon in a concrete box proved more powerful than any beating. We live in a country that incarcerates more people than any nation and continues Angola's plantation legacy under different names. Albert's story isn't just about resilience. It's a mirror held up to a system that would rather torture innocent people than admit it's wrong. His freedom remains incomplete as long as others remain in boxes. His victory is unfinished as long as the 13th Amendment allows slavery as punishment for crime. Learn these names, share these stories, demand these changes. The measure of our humanity isn't how we treat the innocent. It's how we treat those we've decided deserve nothing. If a man can maintain his dignity for 44 years in a 6x9 cell, surely we can maintain the fight for justice in the vastness of our freedom.